Hey folks, Sam Jones here. Thanks for tuning in to another episode. And before we get started, I wanted to let you know that Off Camera is also a television show. Did you know that you could be watching this conversation right now if you have DirecTV, or if you go to our website at offcamera.com? I'm just saying this because a lot of people don't even know that we're also a television show, and I think that there's different ways to enjoy Off Camera. I love podcasts and I love radio, so it's great to be able to take the show in your car or on your run, or if you're ironing, or any of the other ways that we've heard that people are listening to this show. But if you haven't experienced it on television, it's really quite a different experience because you can see these thoughts forming as we talk to different guests on our show. So I encourage you to check it out if you haven't yet. You can either tune into Channel 239 on DirecTV's Audience Network, or just go to offcamera.com. There, you'll find the director's cuts of all of our shows. That's right, on DirecTV, our shows are 58 minutes long. But on our website, they're often much longer, because sometimes the conversation just keeps going. So make sure to check that out. It's a way to enjoy Off Camera even more. And, as always, it's filmed in glorious black and white. And now, let's get on with the show. Cue the music. Hello and welcome to another edition of Off Camera. I'm your host, Sam Jones, and in this episode, I sit down with actor, producer, and proud Canadian Ellen Page. It's hard to imagine anyone better suited than Ellen Page to play Freeheld's reluctant activist, Stacey Andre, who finds herself battling for domestic partner rights while dealing with the death of her lover. Given that Page very publicly came out as gay last year, I wanted to ask her about how that journey dovetailed with the release of the film. I was also curious about how she approached playing a fictional version of a real-life character, which was a new artistic experience for her. If you've seen Freeheld, you'll know she pulled it off, and I think the film's biggest achievement is making a personal story universal without turning it into a heavy moral message. If you haven't seen it, you should. That's my moral message. Her decision to come out raised so many questions for me. Was she prepared for its effect on her career? As an artist, did she really have another choice? Are we ready to believe out actors in heterosexual roles? And where will she take it from here? We also discussed how her early work in Canada fostered her love of acting and her decision to leave home at age 16 to work, which, if my daughters are listening, don't even think about it. The joy and freedom she so obviously feels since deciding to be true to herself is not only inspiring, but really contagious. So pull up a chair and listen in. Hi, Ellen.
Hi, Sam.
Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
You know, it's funny. I was looking at your body of work, and it just seems to like reflect so many current issues. Like the roles you've played and the films you've chosen to do have just happened to be like these, have touched on these hot button topics as, you know, as they were happening. Like, you know, in Hard Candy, you dealt with the issues of like sexual predators, and then in Juno, you're dealing with teen pregnancy and adoption versus abortion, and Freeheld, you're dealing with gay marriage, and you know you're not even 30 yet, and it's kind of amazing to me, like that your career has dovetailed with all these issues, and I have so many questions about that, but you're a Canadian,
mm-hmm.
which I thought Canadians were just sort of like. They don't want to make any, they just kind of, you know.
We're real people, yeah.
You're real people.
walking amongst you.
What's that? There's the joke about Canada. It's terrible and funny at the same time. It's like America's attic. Like, there's lots of good stuff up there, but we just forget about it.
Yeah, which is kind of nice. It's kind of nice to be from a place like that.
Well,
like a secret space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's start with Freeheld, because this is an incredible film, and it's, you know, to me, it does that kind of magical balancing act where it's a really personal story that also touches on really universal themes. And I think that's a hard kind of film to pull off. But people may not know, it started, there was a documentary short called Freeheld that won the documentary short Oscar,
mm-hmm.
right? In 2008?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So tell me about your first experience of seeing that documentary and about your emotional connection to the film and what made you start to act on that.
For sure, yeah. I was first sent it by Stacey Sharon, Michael Schamberg, who are producers on the film. And I was shooting Whip It at the time in Detroit, and mm-hmm. I remember it well. I was 21, and I was in my hotel room in downtown Detroit, and I was initially even just sent the trailer to the documentary. I don't think I'd had I didn't have like the long form copy of it yet, and just the trailer itself made me weep. And I was crying, and I think off of that, I was like, yes, 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 I'd love to be involved. So they were basically reaching out to see if I would attach myself as Stacey, and this is obviously pre-Ron and pre-Pete and pre-Julianne. And that's really where it began. And I was just moved so deeply, and it was an immediate yes. And then they were really generous and kind and let me be involved in making it happen. And
in terms of producerial role
in terms of
development.
Yes, and putting it together. So
right.
It was a pretty wonderful experience.
Well, okay, so tell me, I think that having a documentary as source material for a narrative film can be either a blessing or a curse, mm-hmm. kind of depending on the film and the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Did you, you know, how is your process, just speaking from the acting side, how is it different when you have that kind of wealth of source material versus when you're sort of inventing a character off
sure.
just a page?
Yeah, it's different. I mean, it's similar in the sense that because I had that documentary, because it was such a part of my life leading up to making the film, I watched it multiple times. I think emotionally it was so, the story was so in me and Stacey was so in me. I could so easily be transformed on a really, really deep level.
Right.
Because it's pretty hard to hear about the story, let alone watch that documentary and not be moved to tears. You know, it's real devastating and, of course, inspiring story. So emotionally, it was sort of already, like, in my cells. That's
right.
How it felt, because it'd been such a part of my life for years. And then what the benefit of it, you know, of Stacey, because Stacey was so generous to me, as well as to Julianne. And I spent time with her. I went to their, you know, the house that they lived in together, the house that ultimately they fought to keep, you know, hung out in the community. And I think you get an insight that can obviously go even deeper and make a more complete view of the situation, of their relationship, the authenticity of it. And you can try and form something and communicate with someone who went through this experience to ultimately make something as real and true and as authentic as possible. And that
right.
was ultimately, of course, the goal, and to not deviate from the reality of their relationship, the good elements, the not-so-good elements like everyone has, and ultimately what they went through.
Right.
So, you know, thankfully, Stacey was really, you know, kind to us, which is hard, because needless to say, it was an emotional experience
sure.
to be reliving
to
that
it all.
And
right.
have this little person show up at your house who's, like, asking about it.
Well, yeah, so did you have a lot of access to her? Was there sort of, like, how much time did you spend with her face-to-face?
Face-to-face, I spent a day with her in her home in New Jersey, and she came to set, and we talk on the phone, and that was, you know.
So when you're an actor and you've, like, I'm assuming that there's a script before you meet her face-to-face or no?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So you already sort of have a story. Like, what are you looking to collect? I mean, imagine it's like any other thing where you're trying to make something whole out of a bunch of pieces, right? You've got the script, you've got her story, you've got the documentary. So when you meet her, what are you looking for? I mean, are you trying to get physical mannerisms? Or are you trying to get more of the emotional core? Like, you know what I mean?
I think both, you know. I
yeah.
think I made a comment at one point about, like, her physical manner, and she was teasing me about how weird that was, as if I was just, like, sitting there and watching her. But
what do you mean?
I'm sure it was an unusual experience for her,
you know,
to have an actor show up who, like, comments on how you exist physically in your body or, you know. But I think to really go and to exist in someone's space, I think to go to where they work, to go to the corner store where Laurel got coffee every morning, to hear different stories, to hear different details, to hear the things that are joyful and funny and give you a visceral picture of what their life was like together,
mm-hmm.
and to hear the things that are really difficult to hear. To hear things like her gratitude and her excitement that the story was getting told, and the sadness also that the story's getting told because Laurel died. You know, we wouldn't be making the movie if she hadn't lost the love of her life.
Sure,
and,
sure.
You know, and when you're sitting with someone and they say something like that to you, that's a hard thing to hear. And I think the way in spending time with someone, that's the way that's gonna, even though the documentary has, even though the script would make me cry every time I read it, to spend time with someone who's been through something that's so unimaginably difficult, I cannot imagine watching the love of your life die.
Yeah.
And to get to really, really understand the emotional impact of that, of course that stays with you, even though you've continued to live your life and love your life. Stacy is one of the most joyous, lovely, kind-hearted people you could possibly meet, right? I think it just gives you a more details, more color, more texture. It just gives you more, honestly.
Right.
And honestly, it's nice to have the personal connection and to feel that this person is involved, you know? Because ultimately the one thing that matters most is that Stacy sees the film and thinks, oh, my story was told in an authentic way. Oh, it does Laurel justice. You know, that's ultimately what I care about the most, of course.
Right, because in the end, it's not like you're playing Lucille Ball and everyone knows Lucille Ball.
Totally.
You're playing a private person.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point, it's like only you will know how well you're doing the impression.
For sure.
Right?
Yeah, I'm playing a private person, but I'm playing a private person who's from Pennsylvania and a mechanic and, you know, and went through this big transformation in this period in her life with Laurel and what they had to go through, and you know, you do want to make it as authentic and as real as possible, which is I guess what made me so nervous. And then I think it's once you feel like you know what you're doing, you know how you're gonna exist in your body, you know how you're gonna speak, then it kind of does disappear a bit.
Right.
That's what happens, I would say.
I mean, I have a theory about nervousness and fear, which is that if you're not scaring yourself occasionally, then you're probably not growing that much as an artist. But I wonder how that nervousness manifested itself, like, as shooting was ramping up. Is it like, how did it come up? Did you question like your abilities as an actor, or did you, like how did you sort of, you know, how did it show up and how did you fight it?
I think I get nervous before every movie, and I'm convinced that I've forgotten how to act and the person's gonna see me on the first day, and like typically on the first day I'm making jokes all the time about who they should recast me with, you know?
Really?
Yeah. So it will change, like it'd be a different actress each hour, you know, and I'm kidding, but I'm also a little bit not. I feel like there's always a nervousness when something's beginning. You know, you're like, oh, they thought I was right, but they're going to see me and I'm not going to be right, which could be the case, right? There's a lot of, you know.
It could always be that
you
time.
Know, that could always be the time.
Yeah. No, I totally understand that.
This time had a little bit more, and I do think it is because it's so personally important to me. I've always loved Julianne and looked up to her so much, and I didn't want to let her down.
Well, I imagine, I mean, also, you can do all the preparation in the world, but I always feel like if you don't find a way to connect with somebody. Mm-hmm. You can both be the most prepared people in the world, but you just keep missing each other. I mean, totally. And in this film, there's a lot of intimacy involved. Mm-hmm. And did she express anything to you in that way? Like, did she come up and say, how do you want to handle this stuff? Or like, did she find a way to get you guys sort of on equal footing?
Well, I think she naturally does that because she's so, Julie's just the most, I think it boils down to this, if this makes sense. She just loves what she does. You don't feel there's nothing jaded about her. There's nothing pretentious. There's nothing. That does not exist. She is the most curious, loves her job, showing up every day, just like, totally 100% ready. I suppose I'm nervous because I'm about to do a film with Julianne Moore and I play her romantic counterpart in that movie, which is like, if you told me that, 10 years ago, I would have been like, what, So there's something giddy about that,
Sure.
I mean, and I think, right, even when we first started rehearsing, I don't know if she did it because she thought, oh, maybe I would be nervous to talk about the intimacy or how we were going to achieve that. She was kind of just immediately like, touchy, legs up, like comfortable, no.
Right.
Just kind of jumped right in with that. And then we had the lovely fortune of getting close quickly. We're still close, we're friends, and we managed to connect. And we kind of were always, I feel like, always on set, touching, arms around each other, snuggled up on a couch. It came kind of natural to us, and
yeah,
that just sort of stuck through the whole shoot.
Well, I there's a scene in the film that really, really moved me. And if people don't know the film, I don't want to spoil anything,
sure.
But it's basically the retelling of a New Jersey detective who wants to give her pension to her partner,
mm-hmm.
and they're in a domestic partnership, which was a precursor to gay marriage. And it came down to basically these five white guys to decide whether or not she gets to transfer her pension to her partner.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's all these meetings in which looks like a city council room. And at one point, your character, Stacy, takes the mic back up to the lectern to put it back in the holder. And it almost seems as though Stacy, your character, wasn't planning on speaking, but then you find yourself in front of a mic and you deliver this speech that I feel is so universal, but it's delivered through such a personal story. And you talk about just wanting to be regular
mm-hmm.
people. And it was, I think, to me, the most moving moment of the film. And it gave me a sense of the subtlety that you were able to bring to that role and that fine balance of the universal story versus the personal, and how, like, it's that thing where the most personal story can be the most universal because
mm-hmm.
at our heart we're all the same. And that's exactly what the film's trying to say. But it brings up two questions. One, I wonder if you and Julianne and Pete, the director, I wonder if there was a lot of talk about tone and balance of the film because I think it is a high wire act
mm-hmm.
to make a film both universal and personal, and without it becoming, too much of a morality play.
Totally.
But was that sort of your biggest concern, also being a producer on the film, is getting the tone right?
It's so sweet of you to say that about the speech, and also, it's a testament to Ron Nicewander, who wrote the screenplay and wrote a beautiful speech. And I think for me, first and foremost, this film's a love story. And I think when it's tackled's the wrong word, but when it's looked at through that perspective in making it, and that's the goal, I think it enables those other elements to potentially not feel so heavy-handed.
Right.
And the tone was a conversation more in the sense that we wanted certain elements to be to have a layer of complexity that we don't always get to see. For example, being in a closeted relationship. It's more complicated than one person. I'm sure this can be the case sometimes, but my experience has been, as someone who's been in certain relationships like that, it's more complicated than be out. I don't want you to, I want to go to the barbecue. Why can't I go? Versus the difficulty and the pain and actually understanding the difficulty and pain and be willing to compromise. And that sadly being a part of your relationship, because we do live in a homophobic and transphobic society. And so lots of people are in these kinds of relationships for all kinds of different reasons. And I think what was great about this movie is even just that. We got to tackle with a different kind of complexity, give it a different color of this, it's sad and it's unfortunate and it sucks. But Stacey sort of, Stacey understands. Right. She understands that. Yeah, if you'd been out as a cop this whole time, no, you probably wouldn't be where you're at in your career, potentially, right? So I think our goal was hopefully adding layers of complexity to help with the tone, so it didn't seem so much of a morality tale, whereas, Right. Of course, with me, it's just like, no, one side's wrong, you know? But, you know, to give it that extra layer of complexity. So I think the goal was complexity and authenticity at every point.
Right, right.
Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And I think that speech fits with that because Stacey does not seem like someone who is interested in joining the fight of who's right and who's wrong at all. She just wants a regular life. And that's what makes it hit home, I think, is that she's not Rosa Parks coming up to the front of the bus demanding something. She's just like, look, I want to keep my home because this is what I have and it's who I am and it's mm-hmm. what I'll have left. And anyone who can't understand that, you know what I mean?
Totally.
But in thinking about that, I also thought, okay, if you're an actor, and I'm not an actor, but I would assume that identifying certain moments in the script that you've got to land.
Right.
Like those identifiers. Now, sure. I was talking to Will Ferrell about his film, Stranger Than Fiction, mm-hmm. and there was one scene that he was very worried about, and apparently so were all the producers, because they all showed up on that day, and it was the scene where he had to cry, and mm-hmm. no one was sure if Will Ferrell could, like, play a straight scene and cry, and so... Mm-hmm. It was his most nervous day. And I mm-hmm. thought about you. I thought about what is it like for an actor the night before in the prep when you know you have something like that the next day. And maybe it's not that scene at the lectern for you. But is there, like, are there those moments where you have to just sort of close the doors and figure it out the night before and get yourself in a place where you can do it? I mean, how do you handle that when you know it's sort of like, that's the definition of my character, that's the moment I have to land?
Well, I think, you know, that's something you're talking about in rehearsal. You know, that would be a perfect example of something you'd probably have a significant conversation about, right?
Right.
I think that scene in the film for Stacey, as a character, as a person, so much is coming together for her that it's, like, for example, more than not wanting to be an activist, she doesn't want to accept that part of what's going on, because that signifies, oh, the love of my life is dying.
That's right. Like, because
she doesn't even want to go there, because that means she's fighting for the pension of the woman she wishes she could marry.
She
if
wants to
they were
the
allowed
cancer.
To get married and wouldn't have to be dealing with this situation. To not, you know, it for her it represents an unimaginable loss, right? So
right.
it's coming to terms with that, coming to terms with the fact that this person you love is going to die. And she's shy, you know? She's not someone who's going to go up and speak in front of people, you know? And then on top of that, I think what was interesting is, for me, it's so emotional. That's such an emotional piece to say.
Yeah.
And if you're a person in that situation, you're not going to want to be... You're not going to be wanting to be crying in a room full of people when you're already shy, you know? So it was an interesting experience, because a lot of it was me having to just hold back what me as Ellen wants, how I want to
exactly.
respond to that situation.
You're someone who cries at the trailer and every time you read the script, and you're someone who's like, would never cry in public.
No.
Or never, right.
And needed to remain, you know, or this is, you know, an example of why spending time with Stacey was good, needed to remain really, really, really strong in front of Laurel all the time. Never had an opportunity to feel what she probably wanted to and should have been able to feel, because she was with Laurel, having to be strong, take care of her, go to work, deal with insurance companies, and then start dealing with, you know, the whole activist component of it
right.
all. and the legal battle. So Stacey really never got a moment to herself. She never got a moment to feel what was going on. And I think potentially that scene and those few scenes surrounding that is really, really the first time, maybe not the first time, you know, we see a lot of vulnerability and heartbreak when she gets the news from the doctor, which, you know.
Sure.
But for the most part, really has to maintain this sort of stoic nature, which she is. But
yeah.
She's also a person who's watching the love of her life die, so.
There's another scene I want to talk about that I think is very meta to me. And I want to ask you about a timeline.
Sure.
Let me ask about the scene of your first date, and you're in a club, and you're trying to get Laurel, who's a very introverted, in the closet, cop, detective, and she's at this club with you, and you're trying to get her to dance. And you kind of won't take no for an answer, and you bring her out on the floor, and you guys start dancing. And and I thought about your own personal story, and it's sort of like, in a meta version of it, it's like you're coming out on screen in a way and showing us this intimate part of your world, too. Like, did you think when you were filming that scene, like, this is like somehow sharing my own personality and my own story with the audience, too? I mean, did you think in terms of that when you shot that scene, or that an audience may look at that scene in a meta way?
Oh, it's funny. You know what? This might sound like a line, but I don't. It's interesting to hear that, because you say that and I'm like, oh, of course. Like, of course that could be someone's experience watching that if they happen to know me or know that the fact that I'm gay or came out, you know, I don't want to assume, but. But yeah, I think there was something special. The very first day, actually, we shot the scene where I asked her for her number at the beginning.
Oh, right, in the parking lot.
In the parking lot. And this will sound, I always want to preface this with, it's hard to say this because I know Stacey and the film is, you know, heartbreaking and a true story, so I hope this doesn't come across in a bad way by any means. But I remember that day feeling like a peace and a joy and a delight that I hadn't felt on a film set in a really, really long time. Like, probably since I was like a teenager, 15, 16, really falling in love with acting, really falling in love with just the art of film in general. I think the feeling of, like, being out in my life, having that cloud away, all of those fears that I had just gone in an instant, all not even real, you know, none of that's even real.
Right.
And then to be there and experiencing working with someone so phenomenal, telling a story that's meant so much to me for years, I just feel humbled and grateful to be a part of telling, and to be asking a woman for a number in a parking lot. It was just like a really, really special, like, really, really special moment. So weirdly, that one, for some reason, probably more hits me, maybe because it was the first day and one of the
right.
first scenes that we shot, and I'm really flirting with a woman and trying to get her to go out with me.
Oh, and it was one of the first film.
It was the first scene.
Shot.
Yeah, one of the first scenes I shot.
That's interesting, too, because I would imagine that, you know,
yeah.
that there's that dynamic between the two of you as well.
Yeah.
Like, you're trying to flirt with her. Like, I think about this as an actor. Your intention in a scene has to be true. Like, you have to be trying
mm-hmm.
to flirt with her in real life, too, right?
Totally.
So,
of course I'm going to flirt with Julianne Moore.
Right. But the point being that, like, I could see how that would be real really quick. Because if it's not, then it's not going to be real for an audience.
Yeah, no, and of course, it's real when it's a guy, too, you know?
Sure.
It's not like I'm, you know, it's, you know, I feel like for the most part, the last film I did, you know, I can have great chemistry with men, you know? It's less about whether or not you can have a chemistry if you're straight or gay or you're playing a gay role or not, by any means. It was the experience of feeling like, oh, I'd gone through this thing in my life that I'm so happy to be through, to be out and
right.
just through with that anxiety and that just not, you know, true thoughts or fears that I had. And then to be having this experience of playing this character and playing,
right.
playing a role that's gay and interacting in this way. And even when you talk about the gay bar scene, like, I think of that, and I'm like, oh, that's so funny, because it was pretty much, I couldn't go to gay bars before. I couldn't do that.
Well, that's
I couldn't,
the thing.
I mean,
it's
I
like,
could, but I had the idea in my head that I couldn't. So But it's funny when you say that, I'm like, oh yeah. But I actually didn't, you know, I didn't have that thought when I was shooting it. But it is interesting to hear your perspective or hear you maybe think of that when you're watching it.
Well, I liken it to like, you know, if an actor had a child and then played a role where they had a child
right
at that same time. And so as an audience member, you feel like, oh, that's what it's really like to be in that actor's house with a newborn and how he's trying to, or she's trying to soothe the newborn to sleep. Mm-hmm. Like there's a meta element to that where you can, I don't know, I felt that and I wondered about the timing of, because I think you came out in February of 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And then was there any conversation about that with Julianne or any, I mean, obviously she's playing a gay woman, you're playing a gay woman, but I don't know, was there any sort of conversation about how that goes down based on your experience for her or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, there was actually. There was a special moment in when we were rehearsing, so it was Julian, Pete, and I, we started to have a conversation about what it means to be closeted and what that feels like. And I don't think anyone had sort of directly asked me that question before
In
such an intimate way and with such intimate material and difficult, I say difficult, emotionally difficult material. And I started explaining what it feels like. And, it really got me, shall we say. And it was an interesting experience to explain to Julianne, who's, married to a man, a lovely man, beautiful family, you know, what it feels like, what it really feels like, what that, how painful and toxic that is, and to explain to someone who hasn't experienced that or
Right.
and explain to Pete what that feeling is. And I think that was for me an interesting moment, or you know, an emotional moment, shall we say.
Well, you mentioned that you were pretty depressed before coming out, and I wondered like how long you sort of went through that and fought that, and because I think the thing about going through a depression and being really successful is there's a duality to that. Forget being closeted versus being out, or I think there's a duality to how the world sees you and expects you to appreciate your life versus what's going on inside.
Totally.
And when you're really successful, you don't have the option to curl up in a ball and unplug your phone. And I just wondered, like, how long that was a pallor over your work and how you sort of dealt with that.
Yeah, I think when you speak of the duality, that's interesting because you do feel that. Because you feel guilty for feeling bad. So you feel bad and then you feel guilty for feeling bad because you have so much privilege, you know?
Right, you have people bringing you food.
You do something that you love, this thing that you love to do, and people are like, yeah, we're going to let you do that and we're going to give you money to do it. And then at a certain point, they're like, we're going to give you, like a decent amount of money to do it, you know? So you feel guilty, you know? You live in comfort, and you don't have to worry about much. I think it was, I would argue I was young. I was young when Juno came out. I was 20 years old, turning 21.
Right.
So still in a space of discovering your own sexual identity. I did have a girlfriend at the time, but, you know, not necessarily completely settled on who I was, despite, in retrospect, probably knowing when I was 14, 15, right? But you're going through your own journey, then overnight, a fair amount of people know who you are, or they at least know your face. So you go through that very strange transition.
And right, because there's a duality there, too, of who people think you are.
Totally.
Versus who you are.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's a closeted, probably parallel to being famous, right?
Totally. And that's a big transition unto itself that I think is another thing that you can't always speak about because it is a thing that a lot of people seem to want or are striving for, even though I'm not sure people are totally clear on what that is. Do you
right.
know what I'm saying? So you're going through
you
that.
You can't know.
You can't know, right? And you can't know until it happened and, you know, you navigate it on your own and you find your feet again because it is, it's definitely a strange experience. I would imagine anyone could imagine that it's a strange experience to go through. I think it happened more when you know, settling back into my life, making films, hiding, you know, for the most part that I was gay, not to my family or my friends by any means, but not existing in a relationship in the way you wish you could, in the way you wish you could when you see your straight friends existing. And I would say it probably just, it settled in more and more and more, and like anything that's toxic, it just, you know, it's like a bucket, and it starts filling and filling up and filling up and filling up and filling up, and then it pours over. And it just got to a point where it wasn't okay anymore. I felt uninspired. I did feel sad. I felt like it was absolutely affecting my work. Because how are you going to feel creatively motivated when you feel like you're just living in a way that's not true?
Well, yeah, that's the question. As an artist, can you hide your true self and really experience any of the joy that goes along with being an artist, right?
Totally. I think there's this idea that you have to have sadness and pain to be a good artist, right? It's like, it's a very famous cliche of this, like, you know, brooding thing. And for me, my experience is unbelievably the exact opposite. You know, that the more I've been able to grow, the more I've been able to express my true self, you know, talk about LGBT issues, because I think a part of me also just felt guilty. Because you do have so much privilege. You think of the pain and the sadness you felt, and then you think of those in your community are so much more vulnerable than you, and what they're having to deal with on a day-to-day basis in America and around the world, you're just like, you know what? For me personally, this isn't, you know, not necessarily for anyone else, but for me personally, it felt like a moral imperative to say, yes, I'm gay, people are gay, they are gay people, always have been, always continue to be, let's try and move this along.
Right. Well, you mentioned that in a story I read that at a certain point, because it's interesting, you had this project and you were developing Freeheld for a long time while being in the closet. Mm-hmm. Was it sort of like a thing where you just sort of knew, well, at some point I'm going to have to deal with this? Or were you just going to, like, what made you finally just say, okay, I can't honor this film and this story and stay in the closet? Like, did it get to a certain point where you were like, I have no other choice?
Yeah, and it really had nothing to do with some sort of ultimatum. Like, I didn't feel like there was some sort of, I have to be out before this film. Needless to say, of course, when you read that script and you're going to make that movie, it's like, I can't be a closeted person and make this movie. You know, you just can't.
Right.
It's just, like, not acceptable, truly. It's just not an acceptable thing to do. I will say, though, so yeah, I guess that was an element of it, but truly, I don't know why that, I don't know how or why it worked out, but my own internal journey with my sexuality, with my wanting to be open about it, with me getting to a place of almost like utter excitement about coming out. I mean, I went from verbatim saying, someone asking me like, oh, well, could you come out at some point? I said, oh no, that's impossible. I think there's an idea that you cannot be out as an actor and be successful, or you're gonna get pigeonholed or what have you. That's something that I definitely internalized and believed. You know, there aren't that many out. There's just not that many out actors.
Right.
And I think we're gonna see that change, of course. Like, we're gonna see more people who are out. You know, tons of musicians are out now.
Right.
Athletes are starting to come out. You know, it's an exciting time, and I think it's gonna make the progress go, even much quicker, because as much as, you know, same-sex marriage has become legal, there's still a lot to be done.
Sure.
I think it was a lot of those big external ideas and fears. Oh, my career will be over, or then I'm that, you know, everybody knows I'm gay, you know. And then that relates to the internal thing of still not having completely dealt with shame, which is the most toxic thing that is infused in young gay and trans people. And I would say anyone, you know, in the LGBT community, you know, understands what I'm talking about. And it's a process that you can pretty much only deal with on your own. And it's, you know, I remember thinking that I was totally fine with being gay.
Right.
Totally accepted it, loved myself, whatever. And it's like, no. Honestly, it was really, truly the moment I came out where you really, really understand the shame and the toxicity you were carrying. It's the first.
You have to go through it to find out.
Yeah, it's the first time I really understood it. And I think it's the thing that makes me, it makes me the most sad and the most heartbroken when I hear the rhetoric from the right, or I've been making a show with Vice and I've been around the world exploring LGBT culture in other countries. And it's that shame that is what I really wish could go away.
I completely agree. But I think, okay, so once you take this massive step and you do this, was there immediate effect on your work? Like, was there immediate like lightness to your step and a feeling of like a weight off your shoulders? And have you noticed it in your work since?
Totally. Overnight. Like, just
overnight.
I remember the next day, I was in Vegas and I went to the made speech, came out. And then the next day I flew to Montreal to do X-Men reshoots. And just like the people on set were just like, you're totally different.
Really?
Like, you're totally different. And I got it.
Did you have a moment of fear of like, oh, what have I done? Or like, now I have to actually deal with this?
Never.
Never.
Never. Never. And
that's
so
the
like,
thing
if there's
fear,
one thing I
it?
Could say, and look, there's a lot of people who, can't come out because honestly, they could be in a violent situation, right? But anyone who's like thinking about it, or struggling with it, or afraid of things, I would say the payoff, the joy, the freedom, the cloud, the weight off your shoulders is like, I get emotional talking about it. I can barely put words to it. It's just like, you're almost just like, oh, I wish I'd done that. I wish I'd done that sooner.
When do you think you knew? What age were you when you felt like, I know this?
Like 14, 15, you know? But I think when you, it seems like not that, I know I'm young, and it doesn't seem like that, a long time ago, but a lot for the LGBT community has like changed drastically since I was just 15, mm-hmm. 14. And I grew up in Halifax, Nova Scotia, which, I would say for smaller cities, progressive, and I wasn't experiencing, I wasn't surrounded by out gay people, right? So
right.
You're in a space where, you're having these feelings you don't understand, you're putting the word maybe bisexual to it, it's more too of just like, oh, I don't understand why girls are so into this, like, why do they like this kissing stuff, why is every poem written about this, I don't get it, just not having that feeling that you think, I guess, everybody's pretending to have, and then
right.
You start
I never thought of
figuring
it,
it out, and then you finally fall in love with a woman and you're just like, oh, or you finally kiss a woman and you're like, got it. Here we go. Let's tackle life.
Well, to take it in another direction, mm-hmm. I think it's fascinating. Anyone who starts doing what they love to do really young, it's amazing to me because first off, there's so much experience that you have at still a relatively young age. How early did you know, like, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life, and how serious did you get about it?
Totally. So, yeah, I started when I was 10 sort of by a, delightful accident, someone coming to my school. Well, someone,
oh, tell me that
a
story.
Lovely actor named John Dunsworth. And so if anyone is a Trailer Park Boys fan, which is a huge show in Canada and then has more of, like, a cult following in America because it was on Netflix.
Okay.
It's one of the most successful TV shows in Canada ever. And John Dunsworth plays Mr. Leahy on that show. So he's sort of now like quite a famous person in Canada. And so back when I was 10, he had like a little casting agency in Halifax. And he just came to my school looking for kids to audition for a CBC movie of the week called Pit Pony, which was based on a book, sort of turn of the century, mining, Cape Breton mining town, little movie. I went in and auditioned for it. And I went back again and I got the part. And it was like a lovely, exciting thing, but that's sort of how it was treated by my family and me. Like, oh, this will be a fun little experience
right.
that you'll have. But then that turned into a TV show, so it continued. But I was a big soccer player when I was a kid, so it was always sort of like, keep focusing on your soccer, keep going to school, like, not in a rude way, but like, you know, this isn't your future, so let's focus on the, you know, this isn't going to be what you'll be doing, you know? That's not really your thought process when you're necessarily from a place like Nova Scotia, which it should be and could be for sure, but it's not like growing up in LA where it's a really, you know, a pretty straightforward idea of how that's going to happen, I guess, right? It just seems so separate. And then it was when I was 15.
I mean, did it dawn on your parents at one point, like, oh, we may have that kid?
I think my father would say he came to Sundance with me when Hard Candy played at Sundance, and I think for him that was his experience of like, oh, like this is going to be a thing.
Like he can't stop this train.
No, and they were really cool because when I was 15 was when I think it was that I started to get play roles that were more mature, had more of a emotional depth, bigger arc.
Well, certainly Hard Candy is a mature film.
For sure. And then a couple Canadian films leading up to that was an experience. It wasn't just like, oh, I'm memorizing lines and attempting to say them in a natural way.
You never had your sitcom years.
I didn't have my sitcom years. Right. But I had a lot of, you know, I did a lot of, which I'm totally grateful for, you know, little movies of the week when I was called, like, I Downloaded a Ghost and Ghost Cat and, you know, lots of fun, lovely things. Lots of ghosts. I have a lot of big past with ghosts. But you know what I'm saying? It just worked. I worked in Canada and I made these movies and loved it and I'm thrilled for all of it, right? It's been an awesome experience. I'm saying roles that took on required a deeper sense of potentially emotional understanding.
Right.
Which at 15 was pretty fascinating. Because I think at 15 and 16, 17, you do feel so deeply. Right?
Yeah.
And your experience of the world is so raw, and you're discovering music, you're discovering film, you're discovering art. It's a time of, like, an incredible emotional just texture in your life. But I don't always think anyone treats you with that or gives you that respect when you're that age, right? Of having an emotional understanding, of being moved by art or our work. Do you know what I mean?
There's less... From the adult folks, it's all like, oh... all that's going to come.
Like your experience is like devalued or something.
Because
they've
already
gone
through it.
It's a really true experience because you're not jaded and everything's really raw or you're falling in love for the first time and it's making you sick or whatever it is, right? And to then have this experience of working, doing a job where you get to feel everything you could possibly want to feel. No question. That's pretty much your job is to feel, right? Find it, pull it up, check it out, and then bring it out, you know? It's a simple way of explaining it. And that, to me, was like just a turn-on. It was something in me just went like, whoa, what is that? I want to keep learning about that. I want to keep growing with that. I want to keep discovering what that feeling just was, honestly. And then I, on top of that, just started falling in love with the art of film in general. And then I asked my parents if I could move out. I moved to Toronto when I was 16, and I went to school in Toronto and worked.
And they were supportive of that?
They were totally supportive.
I'd be so scared of my children at 16.
I think back now, and I'm like, what?
I mean, that's a lot of faith. They must have seen something in you.
I lived with a friend who's older,
right.
And who they trusted, and I think I don't know why they trusted me. I think I was just a very, like... I mean, probably more on it than I am now. Just, like, really, like, self-disciplined, ambitious kid. Like, I didn't move out to, like, you know, get up to shenanigans. I worked really hard. I worked really hard to keep my grades up, and I worked really hard to act.
I was talking to Ethan Hawke about his experience in Boyhood and acting with the kids when they were pretty young, the two kids in that film, and he said that... they would put him to shame with their naturalistic ability to just be in an emotional moment or be in a scene. And he said he learned so much about how much better of an actor he wanted to be when he was acting with kids. And I wonder, you know, and then there's the quote of Picasso saying he tried to spend his whole life trying to draw like he could when he was a child. Do you think that you started instinctually and like... Were you able to hold on to that, or at some point did you say, oh, I have to learn all this technique, and you got more in your head about it? Like, I guess I'm wondering is, did acting start as just sort of an instinctual thing that occasionally, because we're humans and because we're process-based, we intellectualize it?
Yes. I think for me it's gone mostly instinctual to really heady to back to mostly instinctual.
Well, how do you get back? I mean, that's the...
I think one thing for me, like, it's different for everyone, so it's weird to talk about it. There's one thing I've noticed where I really do think it actually is so much more of a muscle. Like, it's a muscle, you know? It's like you put hours in, you know? I know this might sound silly or unrelated, but I did a video game, and it was all motion capture, and it was, you know, you're doing a 2,000-page script, and it was with Willem Dafoe. It was honestly a really incredible, extremely challenging acting experience because it was 10 hours a day, in a little box, you're imagining everything, you might be talking yourself, and, you know, doing different layers and different options, and it was crazy. You couldn't even construct a school or a challenge on your own like this, right?
Wow.
And it was just this, like, lovely, different opportunity that came up. It was like, oh, totally, I would love to do that. That sounds cool. Willem Dafoe, you know, French video game company doing something, you know, it was cool.
Yeah, I mean, who gets a chance?
But that for me was such a crazy experience because it was as if someone was like put you in a boot camp, like a boot camp of like navigating your emotions. And it was one of those times where I was like, oh, this is so much more of a muscle than I think I ever thought it was. And
so making a video game made you a better actor.
Honestly, because when I was doing press for the game, I said, I know this will... It shocked me. It ended up being one of the most challenging and fulfilling acting experiences I've ever had.
Wow.
And then what's so special is, like, your ego's so removed from it because it's a, you know, it's a video game that people are playing. They're not having the same experience they're going to have when they see you give a performance in a movie. So sort of this really delightful, like, off in its own little space experience. I can't explain it.
Uh-huh.
And, that made me feel like it was more of a muscle. And I think there's just been... I feel like there's something, at least for me, because it's different. You know, some people are super, super method or what have you. And then someone like Julianne kind of reaffirmed this, because I would say, you know, the way she is on a set, I sort of resonate with, is this actually staying really open, like keeping yourself just so, like, wonderfully open, not getting too narrow on what you're doing,
right,
is actually for me what allows then to for me to be so present in a scene that I'm gonna hopefully get to the truth of it with someone else. Because, you know, that's a huge part of it too, is, you know.
Right. What I hear you saying is that if you bring too much of your own technique and planning into something, then you may just stay in your lane. But if you're open to all the outside, is that what you're talking about, sort of?
Yeah, or for me, I think potentially it's however I like to do it is actually a selfish thing. Because the thing that I love about acting the most is reading something on a page and then engaging with someone in a moment that you're creating that's separate from everything around you. That's not even the moment you're going to see in the final product because it's all going to be edited together. And that one moment that I'm getting to have with that person across from me that's arguably separating me from reality, but the idea is that you're creating something truthful, it's like a feeling that where else are you going to get that? You're not going to get that anywhere else.
Right.
And for me, that is the most special, magical moment you could have, whether it's full of joy, whether it's full of pain, whether it's funny, whether it's mundane. Whatever that is, to me, that is the most special thing about it, this collaboration with another person in that moment. And so it's about being as open as you can and not in your head and not overthinking everything or having done that earlier so you can let that go to allowing that to happen. Because it doesn't always happen. It doesn't always happen, of course.
Do you feel lucky that you got to start early in terms of having the experience on the other side of maturity? Like, do you feel lucky that some of those experiences you had were before you had the, you know, I don't know, if you don't make it till you're in your mid-20s, say, there's some jadedness and some there's some cynicism that has to creep in to the business, right?
Mm-hmm.
But to make it the way you did so early, do you feel like I guess do you feel like that's a valuable part of what you're able to do now?
I think so too, and I think in getting to start working in Canada, right? Because it's different.
That?
Well, there's just less money, and there isn't a star system, and you know, it's just different. And that's not to say you can't make films here with that same feeling by any means. But to, at that, because I think what happened to me at 20 with Juno, let's say,
yeah,
would be a really, really much more tricky, difficult thing to go through at, say, 13, 14, 15, right?
Or if that was your first big gig here.
Yeah, I think that experience allowed for something.
Right.
Gave you more of a sense of freedom, less concern about what to, you know, what you wear or what you say or what you, you know, because then that does become a part of your world to a certain degree, because you do become a sort of relatively known or publicish person, what have you. So it does alter your reality slightly, you know?
Right.
I think that's the weird thing that happens when you go from being completely anonymous to not as anonymous. So I would say that's what I feel fortunate for, to have a foundation in that space that was sort of its own isolated, separate thing
right.
from the craziness that we do see affects people negatively sometimes when it happens to them young.
Oh,
really
for sure.
Young,
especially
you know?
If it happens to them big. I mean, I think of your experience with Juno, where I'm sure you got mislabeled as an overnight success in the press,
right?
You know, and got that label a little bit because you were nominated for an Academy Award for Juno.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure after that experience, life speeds up in terms of offers, and it must be hard to navigate. And I can't imagine going through that without the experience that you had. You know, I guess I'm asking, like, in your future, do you see being at the mercy of casting directors so much, or do you see your limits only being self-imposed?
Well, first of all, what I think we hope to see change, or anyone see change, is just more opportunity for women in general. And when I say that, I mean in regards to opportunity, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the feeling of, oh, I want to make my own projects or tell my own stories is because, well, they're stories that I want to see. You know, obviously something in it's inspired me, or it's a script I've stumbled upon, or what have you, and then you want to push to get it made. Because you want to play the part, of course, and then also because you want the story to be told.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a new one that I'm producing, that Kate Mara and I are producing together, is a love story between two women, and we're producing it with Christine Vachon. We're not, you know, just producing it by ourselves, of course. And it's because I want to play the part. I want to make a film with Kate, who's a dear friend of mine, and you know, extremely talented. And I want there to be more stories about that reflect some part of my story as a young gay person, right? So I think that's the impulse of...
Right.
And it's an utter, you know, needless to say, privilege to be in a position where you can make a project happen, or be a part, a small part of making a project happen, shall
right,
I say.
Right, sure. No, and I think that that's... I mean, I'm sure you couldn't imagine all of the fallout or ramifications of coming out, but... You know, there is the spokesperson aspect. There is the fact that you're a very well-known actress who decided to make this public statement, that a lot goes along with that. I mean, you become, even whether you wanted to or not, you become sort of the face of a community
mm-hmm.
in certain ways. And I think you can use that to your advantage the same way that... you know, for instance, last couple of days we've had sort of a debate around the office about how far we've come, even in the last 5 or 6 years, in terms of acceptance. And you know, the debate is like, well, can, you know, are we in the age now where you coming out, can you get the roles that, can you get the straight women roles that you could have gotten before you came out, and, or have we come far enough? And it's funny, in talking about that, I think the bigger question became, does it matter? Are you in a position where it's in your hands, rather than even 5, 7, 10 years ago, how, you know, because it's hard enough, you know, you think about roles for women and the age that women get most of the work, and mm-hmm. like that's a hard enough hurdle to cross, right? To mm-hmm. to just have solid work and great roles as a woman, and then you know, to come out and you know, I imagine that was a fear, but also I wonder if you think we've come far enough along where it will sort of become irrelevant.
I think so. I hope so. And also, like, I can't answer that now. You know, it is one of those things where it's like, oh, we'll see, you know? Like,
are you still in the we'll see phase?
Totally. I'm like, I'm not naive, you know?
Right.
I'm not naive. I know that I came out, and I know that I'm an out gay actor. And there's not that many young out gay actors, which
right.
hopefully will change, right? And it needs to change. You know, I think there's a real unfortunate double standard, right? When you go see Brokeback Mountain or you go see The Kids Are All Right, no one's sitting in the theater going, I really don't believe Jake Gyllenhaal is this gay guy, or I really don't believe Annette Bening or Julianne Moore is lesbians. They're really not pulling it off for me, right? So there's this, like, unfair double standard that we can go and watch a heterosexual, you know, or actor go in and play a gay role and believe it and love it and say they're brave and that it's, you know, what a risk
they're
it is
brave.
Or all
exactly.
that stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then when you're gay, you know, there's an idea of that you can't play heterosexual believably or whatever. And that's just an unfair, you know, unfortunate double standard that stems out of living in a society that's is in its core not fully yet accepting of
yeah.
homosexual people, the LGBT community. I'm hoping it will change. You know, the film I just shot, I play a heterosexual person and who's, you know, highly sexual and an awesome role to play. And, you know, I don't know. We'll see. It's,
yeah.
I personally am, I don't have any worry about playing gay characters. Clearly, you know, I'm, gay character in Freeheld, three roles coming up where I'm, you know, playing gay characters, and that's because it speaks, you know, that story might speak to me more than potentially another actor, and it's probably a story that I want to see told, because I just want, selfishly, I want there to be more gay stories, just like I want there to be more stories about all minorities, whether it's First Nations people or African American people or trans people or what have you, you know, we need more diversity in film. It's just like, let's reflect the reality of the world, you
sure.
know? So we'll see, but, you know, either way, I'm pretty grateful and happy and hope to just continue to make work that excites me, and that's a gift unto itself, you know, so.
Well, I think that it's, I mean, I don't want to use the word brave, but I do think that we're not in a place yet where the decision you made is guaranteed to not affect the system and how and the roles you're chosen for and the roles you're thought of. And I think that is courageous to just say, I'm taking this path and I don't know where it ends up exactly. But I also think it's, you know, creatively, you don't have a choice because look at all the great creative work that will stem from that decision. And to me, that is, it's courageous in the sense of any creative person saying, I'm going my own way and the world can choose to follow me or not, but this is who I am. And that's what I think is going to be so fascinating about, you know, your career as it goes forward.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a fan, and I'm pleased about how candid you were in this conversation, and I just really look forward to watching you.
Oh, thanks so much.
Yeah.
Hey folks, you've reached the end of another episode of Off Camera. I hope you're liking the show, and remember, if you want to get the full Off Camera experience, go to offcamera.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at Off Camera Show or me at Sam Jones. And if you want to get really personal, send me an email, sam@offcamera.com. And if you're not already subscribed to this podcast, go to iTunes and subscribe. And while you're there, take a minute on iTunes and give us a rating. Anything above 4 stars is acceptable. Make sure to tune in next time when I sit down with actor, producer, and one-woman character army, Tatiana Maslany.
I think there's a huge degree of not knowing anything that is, for me, what I'm interested in exploring in acting. I think the reason it's so scary to me and so thrilling is that there is no right or wrong in it. And I think as soon as I start thinking in terms of right and wrong, all my creativity shuts down. I become like a good student as opposed to the person who goes out and does an improv show and just falls on their face and tries things and takes risks.
Maslany burst onto the acting scene a few years ago with her mind-boggling portrayal of multiple clones on the hit series Orphan Black. Full disclosure, I'm a big fan, and I don't even like sci-fi, which is a testament to her incredible performance on this show. Or I should say performance says. Maslany plays 12 different characters on the show, each one more astonishing than the next. Don't miss your chance to get to know this fascinating actress a little better. See you next time, off camera.